No, you, I don't know whether you are aware lah, that Prai actually, historically speaking, means this place is actually quite a popular place lah, if you want to look into history. Yeah? Because Francis Lai was bothered by pirates on the island. And they usually come and hide them inside, because they enter into the Prai River, they can come in right up into what you see now as Marine Sugar Factory. Those days, during his time, this was a kind of a swampy area. Some areas were planted with sugar cane. So these people, they are coming hide here. He used to chase them up to here. In that sense, historically, this is quite a well-known place, huh? But I think instead of I talking about that matter to you, I thought you should, another thing that you must understand is Prai was a railway town. You know, it was a center for railways to operate from here to anywhere. For example, this is Prai. The railway network begins from Prai. Okay, it then from here, from Prai, trains go to KL, Singapore. From Prai, they go to north to Padang Besar, Alustha, and so on. And from here, they also do the container loading, not container, this present container. They have their own bogies, and they call it a bogies. They put onto the goods all on there, and the train will take them away. So that work is also done in Prai. So Prai is a, I said, railway town, because Prai had a huge complex of railway quarters for their workers. The railway quarters. Then this is one area. Then we have the JKR quarters. We had the postal workers quarters. Then we had the JKR, the TNB. TNB, the last time is known as CEB, Central Electricity Board. Then what else? Railway, JKR, postal, TNB. Well, it is something like this, lah. So the Penduduk and the people living here are basically wage earners, lah. But they were working in the railway quarters. They were working in the this kind of government or semi-government organizations. They were the suppliers, labor suppliers. They supplied themselves as workers for these organizations. So this whole town here was populated by this kind of people. Very hard to find Malays or Chinese. So totally Indian affair. Alright. Then this present place is the place that we are sitting here now. Is a former coconut plantation. Very huge coconut plantation. So you can see no factories, nothing at that time. There was only one road. There was only one road connecting the present Prai town to straight to Bukit Metajam.
Only one road.
One road. Straight. You go straight like this, 12 o'clock. Straight road. There was no roundabouts or nothing of that sort. No flyover, nothing. Just one road, that's all. So, the end point of this road, or the beginning point of this road, is beside a river, the present river. You can see the Prai River, that's a river. So from here, everything begins from here. Railway station was also here. There was a ferry called a railway ferry. It berths passengers from the railway station point, getting down point. People get down from the train and then board the ferry. From the ferry, they will go to Penang Island. You see, this is how it works. So after no trains coming or going out, the place will be a dead place, nothing, no activity. Okay, so if anybody wants to leave from Prai to Penang, they have to wait for this ferry to take them to Penang. Or people have to wait here to take a bus that will take them to Butterworth ferry point. And they bought a ferry there and go to Penang. That's how it is. My father was a hardcore laborer. Very hardcore laborer, meaning what? Carry goods in their shoulder and load it onto the barges or into the godown. That's his work. I was born here. My mother was born here. I and my family members were all born here. My uncles also born here. In Prai. So we were the natives of Prai, you can say. Born and bred in Prai.
Native.
Yeah. And I was born in a working class family. Hardcore working class family. Okay, then...
What year is that? What year is that?
Born? 1949. That time Prai had an Indian name, you know. It was not known as Prai.
Really? Where's the Indian name? What's the brother?
It's known as Ananda.
Ananda.
Like Ananda, the restaurant. Ananda Puram.
Puram.
Ananda Puram. But nowadays nobody speak about it. You know, when Indian parents give birth, they will write the astrology in a book. So it is there I noticed that it was written that I, so-and-so's son, was born in a place called Anandapuram. So that's how I know Prai's original name is Anandapuram.
So you write everything in the book?
They have written by
place.
Anandapuram. So it is formally known as Anandapuram. So working class family means the salary is depending on not a monthly salary, it's kind of going to work, sell their labor, come back, earn the living and support the family. That's how it was working. I studied in a local primary school, which is in Prai. The name of the school is St. Mark's. St. Mark's Primary School. When I completed my standard 6, I have to go to Form 1. So I applied to go to BM High School. I applied to St. Mark's Butterworth in near Baganajam. These are the two schools those days. So I did not get these two places. Instead, the ministry sent me to Georgetown Secondary in Batulan Chang Lane in Penang. You must imagine the suffering. Because we got no transport, no bus. So how? The only option left is the ferry from Prai, the riverside ferry here. The river, and in this ferry, this ferry is not the same ferry that you see now. It's a railway ferry. It is meant to transfer passengers from the train to Penang. So I have to tumpang into that ferry and go to Penang. Now we're going to wake up very early in the morning, about 4 o'clock we're going to wake up. Catch the first ferry. To catch the first ferry, because the ferry leaves very early. The ferry leaves about around 5:30, I think. So I'm going to rush up, go there, get the ferry and go across. It's a very slow moving ferry, slow ferry. It runs in steam. Not motorized. So it's a steam engine, very slow moving. So we used to go and we take the bus, there's one Hakka restaurant along the coastal side. What is the name?
Near the Velki there.
Velki. That was the former ferry point that people get down from there. I can't remember the present name. I mean, you can see for yourself, it's there modified. They've made it like a restaurant there.
What, Klang Jati there?
Huh? No, don't go that side. Straight. You know this British Council?
Yeah, British Council.
Yeah, opposite the British Council.
Oh, it's Welkie.
That's Welkie.
Yes, Welkie.
Welkie. So the ferry goes
there. Oh, the Marina Tanjung.
That's right. That's right. So it's opposite, so we get down, wait for the City Council bus.
Oh.
And we go to school. So I studied in Georgetown Secondary School until I finished my Form 5. I left. Then I entered into the jobless market. Not the job market, but jobless market. But there was no job, you know, those days.
So it's around 60s, the time?
67. I left school in 1967. And I had no job, no work. Hanging around here and there, I used to provide tuition classes for children.
In Bride?
In Bride, sir. And what do? I used to go and work in ships, cargo ships.
Cargo ship.
I don't know how to swim, you know. So when I'm in the boat, I hold my life, I'm going to die. Like, how to go? I hope I reach quickly, you know. The fear was there. So I used to work there, like, in spite of all the odds. You got to be like a commando at times, you know. Mm. You go up the ship. How do you go up? No ladder.
Mm.
So they just throw a string ladder to you. Rope ladder. You got to go up the rope ladder like dozen. I think I'm finished. Like, I drop in, I die. Like, because I don't know
how to the ship.
So that was the kind of lifestyle I had. So, but it made me be a rugged person, you know. It made me become tough.
Mm.
Because that lifestyle is tough life, you know. Then, after that, what happened to me? It went on for some time, like nearly 8 years or 9 years I was jobless. Until I managed to get a job in one factory for 2 ringgit per day. My salary was 2 ringgit per day.
Oh.
2 ringgit per day. It's a big money, lah. But cannot survive, you know. I skip lunch. Got no money to buy lunch. I pretend to go home, to come and eat lunch and go back.
Mm.
But I don't eat. I come here, just come here and then I go back again. No money. So situation, how to survive? By this time, I was already married, lah. I had one child. How to survive?
Mm.
Luckily, I keep applying for a job. Then I join one company, multinational company. I joined as a machine operator.
Mm.
Salary was 170 ringgit per month.
70.
Much better than this one. Per month, I'm sure I got money. So
the 2 ringgit one is not...
You go to work, you get. You don't go to work, you won't get.
But there were also a factory.
Factory.
What kind of factories, right?
They were doing textile, knitting.
Oh, textile.
Knitting. Mm. Not weaving. You know, there's a difference.
Mm.
They did the knitting, polyester knitting plant. I was working as a store hand there. I was not recognized. What are you? So, I joined this company called Pen Fiber, the present Pen Group.
Oh, so
work as a Pen Fiber. As an operator, but I was promoted slowly, lah. One step, like that, to the rank of supervisor.
But this one is 70 ringgit per month, you're saying?
170. Bigger, or money big, low. At the time, 170, big salary. So, but it helped me, you know, it helped me to survive. And then I became the supervisor. Then I begin to organize a union there, together with my other friends. A group of people we organized union. We did our collective agreements, we did all those normal work with the union. And actually for me that was my first university. Learning a lot of things in the factory, from work, technical aspects, human relations, treachery, you know, people stab your back. That kind of things all I learned there. That's why I say it's my first university.
Well, when you join the company, the union is already there.
No,
you start.
We together with others that started the union.
So it's an in-house union.
In-house. I mean, okay, if you want to understand that, you must understand these unions. This particular union I came from is from state union. You know, we have in-house. Then above it we have the state based. Then we have national. So this in-house union, we have different unions, different within the same industry. We have different in-house unions. All these in-house unions were affiliated into the state union. State-based union. Not national, but according to state. So if it is in Penang, we call that the Penang blah 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 union. If it is Perak, then we call that Perak blah 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 union. If it's Johor, I like that. So this was Penang Textile Workers Union. So this automatically you affiliate yourself to the state union. So although we are separate, we had one union, the state union. Then of course you have the national unions. All the these states, they affiliate themselves to the national union. And this union here is a national union.
Oh.
Electrical union. This electrical union here, this is a national union. It covers probably right up to Johor. But what is the uniqueness here is, because it is too big, we had a very big membership at one time, almost 31,000 people were members. I think we were the second largest, but not today. So what they did was they open up, you cannot manage such a big union. So what they did, they open up an office here called the North Zone Office. Not zone. This is a non-zone office, but it is not an individual union.
It's a national union. But north office.
Yeah, in charge of north. This is a north office. Yeah. That's all. Similarly, they had one in Johor. I don't know how, but I heard there is one there also. So this connection makes it a very large union. Unfortunately, many companies have left. Why they left? Not because of the union. They left because of capital manipulation. How do you want to manipulate the capital? How do you want to use it for your own profiteering? They moved from one place to another. That's common among multinational companies, right? So for no reason they moved out. For some reason they moved out. But not because of union. The union never created a situation where we have to close and go off. It was never. Even today, not because of union. You know the Fairchild closed down? No union was there. No union. Why are you closed? After nearly 50 years, they were here. Almost 50 years, I think. And they are moving away. They are the first company to be here in NS Electronics. They are moving away. What's the reason? Nothing to do with union. It's all matter of capital manipulation. They want to do it to get more profit. They want to survive and live through all the difficult times. So they are living. That is possible, but not because of the union. So we have lost membership from 31, I said. Today we have about 14 or 16,000 people only left. So all gone. Factory closure. See, at this juncture, I'm going to tell you this. Factory closure, changeover in business, sales, takeover, banks taking control through receiver managers, So these are the factors that has affected workers a lot. They treat workers as some kind of a raw material, use when they want, throw when they don't want. So that is another factor, how we lost membership. So but then we had nearly about 14 companies here in this northern region, Perak, Kedah and Penang, about 14 companies. Today you look there, it's only 6 companies. Okay? And we find organizing is also very difficult. To organize new countries, new companies, it's also very difficult by virtue of the law which splits electrical and electronic. So we are, until now, electrical union tried since 1970 something, 74, 75 we've been trying to organize the electronic unions. We were never successful. The government did not want to give us. But it gave to some other groups who wanted to form an electronic union. It was given to them, but not national, but by according to region. For example, northern region, western region, southern region, central region, like that. And they have got it now. So they have organized this to, they are functioning now as electronic union. There are many factors. If you want to know that, I can talk. Otherwise, it's quite a detailed effort. You want to talk about it?
Can. But okay. We can link a little bit back to your early life when you started the unions. And we can go on.
Even at that time, even when we started, they said that you must go according to trade, occupation, industry. That means, before the amendment was, said you are a telephone manufacturing company, telephone, you have electrical, you have electronics, you have aviation, you have transport, you have rubber, you have palm oil, you have whatever you say, all these different unions can join one union. Can join one union called the General Labor Union, GLU. You can join. This is a bit of history, it will take time. But anyway, the GLUs are supposed to, GLU means General Labor Unions. That means anything can join this union, general union. There is no such thing as you textile, you cannot join because this is electric. No such thing. You can join. Anybody can join. Municipal workers. City council workers. You know, last time Singapore is part of Malaysia. So in Singapore was the headquarters of all these activities. That is somewhere in 1928, I think. They were very active in very progressive unionism, left orientated progressive unions. But after this, there was a lot of pressure from the British to break them up. They don't want to allow. There was a big struggle in getting salary, food shortage. Insufficient wages being paid. So they wanted to make themselves stronger. Even GLUs like this also, they can break up, the British administrators can break up. So what they did they formed a federation, a federation called the PMFTU.
You
heard about it, So this PMFTU is a progressive left-leaning organization, influenced by the Communist Party of Malaya. Okay, so they formed this and said, all of you like this one, single one, all come and join me. So we have one union only, Only one union, big union, for whole Malaysia, Malaya. That's a PMFTU. But they became more and more stronger.
Mm.
The British did not like this. So they were trying to say, no, look, everybody here, these people, they must register. They must register, get a certificate of registration.
The Society Act, lah.
Trade Union Act. Same with Societies Act. This is the Trade Union Act. They make sure that you register. So when they, PMFTU disagree, lah. They disagree because they know once you register, your strength is going to be taken off. You're going to be regulated. You're going to be regulated. So when that happens, you lose your strength. You can't bargain with the British. The British are very powerful people. So they needed some strength. But under this method, they should have succeeded. But because the British were so strong in breaking them up, so they register, and when he refused to register, PMFTU itself refused to register. Some did register, but the bulk of them refused to register. So they were declared illegal. They were declared illegal and they were banned, you know. They were banned completely. They cannot exist, cannot function. Some ran into the jungle to carry weapons, but some stood behind and tried to fight. But by this time, the British became very strong. They changed the laws. They introduced detention laws, and all those things came in after this subsequent release. And some of the provisions which they introduced then is still existing in our some of our acts.
So when you started organizing the unions in the 60s, so is there any constraints or...
When in the 60s?
Yeah, when you become a supervisor...
No, that was not 60s, it was 70s.
70s.
My role, 70s, after 78, I think,
78.
I got involved. But what you understood in the 60s, the situation is very, very bad because they have classified all trade union activities as communist activities. They were stopping unions from progressing. They were putting all kind of laws against the unions. So that was during the 60s. Tough, very tough.
And the socialists were very strong that time.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Labour Party.
Yeah. Political parties helped, Labour Party especially. The socialist front. All these people were actively helping in build up trade unions in the country. But I would say that the trade union movement collapsed under the pressure of the British. I would say that because after PMFT is gone, that is in 1948, 49, around that time, they replaced the Progressive Union with the present system. Don't ask me why you say this, but the present system was a creation by the British to make sure that they have the so-called responsible unions. Now we have responsible unions, huh? Understand? Not the progressive types, no more. So individuals can be progressive, but not organizations. Organizations are very careful. I cannot do this. Careful, don't touch this. Careful, don't say this. What sort of response do you see from the labor movement with regards to our present economic situation? Did you see anything? They won't. Because the mind is different. Just take care of your collective agreements, your wages, that's all. You don't question anything further than that. By right, by this time, workers should have been mobilized, isn't it, to protest against the declining purchasing power.
Yeah.
Now people cannot buy, you know. You think 10 times before you buy one good. Of course, some people are still throwing money, lah, but things are changing. I dare not spend money just unwisely. I need, then only I can.
Mm.
But then, if this goes on like that, it's going to have a very bad effect on the economy. Are you venturing into that area? You want to say something?
Yeah, no problem. Okay.
So, if workers are unable to purchase some basic needs, their needs, so what's the value of working? Isn't it? So they are unable to purchase now, because purchasing power has dropped. Now with the declining currency value, it's worsened by that. If goods are available, they can buy with the money. But if they have money but they cannot buy, what good is that money?
Mm.
That's deflation,
mm.
Not the inflation. You have little money chasing after a lot of goods. Little money. Money, little money you have to buy. You cannot buy.
Mm.
But you have money, but there's no goods in the market. How to survive? So this is the scenario. I think we are approaching that direction now. Workers are going to face this difficulty. I don't know what will happen in the upcoming times, because continuously it is depreciating. So all these comes, these units are the only organs that is going to ask for living wage, a wage they can get to so that they can live. We are not talking about minimum wage, you know.
Mm.
Minimum wage has helped, but that minimum wage is not a living wage.
Mm.
With 900, can you live in Malaysia? Cannot, but that's what I'm saying. So even 1,200 MTUC is trying to push. It still won't be enough. With earlier, yes, maybe like can help you, but today with the currency draw, I don't think so. You can
survive.
You're back to square one, you know. It's cycling. Keeps coming the same way. I mean, that's quite common, isn't it, in the capitalist system. It is common. It is bound to have a cyclical. So today we are at the down end now. We are at the down of the trough. Maybe it will pick up. But with all the external factors surrounding it, it's going to be very difficult, I think.
So when you all started the unions, when you become supervisor, the union is structured really like that, so-called responsible unions or
individual. 1948, somebody called John Brazier, an expert from UK, he introduced this law to say that we are going to create responsible unions. So by virtue of regulations, law,
have to follow.
It has been there. You cannot organize a union outside what you are not. For example, I said something just now. According to industry, trade and occupation. Suppose now, if I am a worker in the textile industry, I cannot join a union which is metal industry. I cannot join. I must only stick to the trade. The trade is textile, occupation is textile work, and the industry is textile industry. You can only be there. You can only organize and join them. You can organize. But there are some other factors which doesn't make it successful for workers to organize their unions. For example, this is one factor, what I said just now, the responsible union factor is based on the division of labor. They divide, and say, so big a union, they now say you cannot. So they introduce this law, so they make they chinchang the whole organization into small unions. No matter how you call yourself a national union, still you are already divided.
Mm.
So what do you mean by responsible is you have to take care of the employer's interest, you must help the employer to develop, to sell, to produce. So you cannot go and question him. Then you are responsible. You begin to question them or demand or to you have your right to withhold your labor, that becomes an illegal strike. So how, no matter how you do, the current situation doesn't allow you to function independently or progressively. That's what I meant by saying being what? Responsible.
But the kind of response, how is the response of the workers, whether they very actively involved in the union?
Gone are those days then. Gone are those days where workers were eagerly waiting, I must join the union, I must stand up for my rights. You don't find it now.
But how about 70s when you started?
Yes, they were.
They were.
Yeah. Very progressive.
Still very progressive.
They don't know they don't know what is meant by being progressive, but in actual practice, they were standing up for their rights, for justice.
How many percentage during your times when the unions, how many workers joined the unions, unionized?
Percentage? Whole country?
Whole country and your own unions?
Oh, ours was quite okay. Textile union, very progressive people were there. I think we had almost 80 to 90%. All of them joined. All the number of companies that we had, all of them joined. Well, of course, some didn't join. They feel they are higher ranking people, therefore they don't have to join. But if you take the whole country today, out of our 19, our total labor force is about 12 million, 12 to 16 million is the labor force.
About half
are labor force. From this labor force, only about 8% to 9% is organized. Then we still have about 90%
It's another way around.
Unorganized. So we have a problem. Why? Those days what happened? Nowadays what's happening? Today they feel that they are well taken care of. Is the social engineering also a problem? We have done to make sure that there is a split, there is no constant unity among themselves. Those days who say he is a Chinese worker, he is a Malay worker, he is an Indian worker, nobody talks like that. They were like friends, brothers, you know. Today you can see the split. You can see the split because politicians put their finger inside and divide. They use race, they use religion. So the kind of unity that existed then, I think, my personal view, that unity doesn't exist today. I believe so. So when the unity is out, you cannot have a concerted effort to struggle for a common cause. They don't see the problem. They don't see the problem. Like, for example, today's latest scenario, they don't see, the workers don't see. Only the mature ones, the older ones, they can realize something. But the younger ones, they don't see. So they're paid wages. Under our Mahathir Mohamad, the consumer culture has been propagated. People earn in this hand, spend on this hand. So that workers are quite content that I can buy. Goods are available, I can buy, I can spend. So they are happy, you know, nobody talks about shortcomings. Well, in the 60s or in the 50s, people were suffering from starvation. They cannot buy food. Don't talk about anything else. Just food for you to fill your stomach. You cannot afford. Forget about education, healthcare, furniture, housing. Forget about it. Just your stomach. They cannot fulfill. Then, but today, how many people can you see on the road? Hey, I got no food. I got no money to buy food. Can you say that? People have money to buy food. Currently, what's going to happen in the future? We do not know. Currently, they have. So who is bothered about forming a union? I asked some workers, female workers, what will you do if your company closes down? Well, I'll go back home. Where's your home? I'm from Kelantan. She's from Northern Perak. They are not interested to know about unionization. They are not here to come and defend their rights. They're here to earn a living. Cannot earn, go back. Cannot earn, no work, get married. So the mind is not focused on a common cause and a struggle. Unlike those days. Those days, I don't know. You don't have to be any ideologically oriented. You don't have to be. Your life, the conditions you are living in
forces you
to stand up for the right. Do you know? I don't think so. I mean, I can open daringly say that. No, I don't think so. That's one. But then employers are also pushing the government to employ more, permit them to employ more contract workers, temporary workers, foreign workers. You know how much? Nearly 6 million foreign workers we have in this country, both legal and illegal. One day this country is going to be taken over by foreign workers. They also have got no interest. They have got no interest. They feel they are here to earn a living and go back home. And there are also terms under the immigration contract that they are not supposed to join or form any organization. But they are not going to help you in unionization. In other words, you can say all these movements are made to break the labor union here, and break them up so that there is no union.
Is there any issue faced by your any special incidents during you organized the textile?
For those days? I know one company, I don't want to mention name, they employed gangsters to stop us to go and meet the workers. Southern Subramanya, Subramanya. So, there was such kind of obstacles also. Employees were marking who are the organizers also. So we have problem, definitely we have problem.
We can share with me any special incidents that the union really stand up fight. Any specific incidents, more details.
I can't really
don't need the name lah, but
no, I can't really remember because this all happened in 19 early 80 lah.
Early 80.
I can't really recollect. But there was resistance put forward by employers, especially the local employers, not the multinationals. The multinationals didn't bother so much.
Oh, really?
But the locals, well, multinationals, they refused to give you.
Oh, they don't bother at all.
Refused, but they did not use any hard and tactics to stop unionization. Not to my knowledge, because maybe others may have experienced it, but not to my knowledge. But one thing is for sure, unionization was never easy. Otherwise today we don't have 8%. We have more than 8%, isn't it? After how many years? 50 years already. We couldn't break that zone to more than 10%. I mean, even in developed countries, unionization would be about 20-30%. Still problematic. But ours is worse, no?
How long you spend in the union, the textile?
Textile, I was there for about 13 years. 13 years. Until I was sacked, no?
Oh, we can talk about that?
No, actually, this is in 1985, I think. I was... prior to that, I left the company to do study circle training. Then to provide training, I was sick on secondment for 2 years. I was out of the company. I came out and I worked for the union, for the textile union, in conducting study circle programs. You know, it's a kind of an informal training program where you can sit and we discuss together about all these issues, particular issues. For example, you want to take up something about some part of the law, then we take, pick that up, everybody know about that, we come and discuss it. So this is how we learn, teach by study circle method. Group discussion. So I left the industry for 2 years on secondment. When I went back, they refused to give me my job. They said that there's no job, you hang around. I was hanging around for a couple of months, you know. Don't know where to sit, no place to sit. You punch card and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
That was my situation. Then after a lot of pressure, they gave me a position in a place called General Affairs. So you'll be in charge of gardens. I was a shift supervisor. You don't make me a... You just hang on for a while.
Okay.
இல்லை இது நேரம் பிடிக்காதான் நான் சொன்னேன் என்ன வர காரணம்